Morning, I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 9 a.m., February 2nd, 2007. With me today is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Huggins, Senator Thomas, Senator Elton. We have a quorum today. I would like to just remind everybody that we would appreciate if you would power down your cell phones. They're distractive. We have Senator Gary Stevens coming in and Senator Olson, who is on the committee.
Morning, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We'd like those powered down, including BlackBerries. The information that we delve into is critical to state issues, and we'd like all of the senators to hear all the information. None of us are on the younger side, particularly the one on the end of this table. I don't hear as well as a lot of other people, so I would appreciate that.
What was it?
Today is going to be the beginning of several meetings we're going to have concerning the pension liability challenges that are facing the state, from the municipalities to the schools to the university and around. We're going to be building some background information before we go into the policy issues. I think it's going to be very helpful to get some of the background stuff down, so we as a committee are looking through as much of the same lens as possible, even though all of us have different backgrounds and different opinions on numerous issues. I'd like the record to reflect that this is normally an operating budget issue. Senator Hoffman is the chair of the operating side, and he has delegated this duty to myself. And it wasn't voluntarily. But in the event that we, from time to time, run into issues in the state that have to be dealt with, no matter how difficult they are to deal with and troublesome to some people, at this table we have to deal with them. And we have to deal with them straight up with as much open information as absolutely possible to the public. So that's what we're going to do. And we're going to move forward through the next few weeks on this issue, and eventually we will have a cleanup bill in front of us on some past legislation, Senate Bill 141 that created the new retirement tiers. And then we're going to have dialogue with the Arm Board, who's in charge of overseeing this issue. And then we're going to be working on dealing with the unfunded liability, which is a monumental issue we're going to deal with, better known as a whopper. So we're going to have some fun here dealing with that one. Today we have with us Commissioner Kreitzer and Melanie Milhorn from the Department of, and if you could please introduce yourself again to the committee and maybe give us a little bit of background on who you are for the people at home so they kind of get a better feel. And then go ahead and proceed into your presentation. The presentation today will not be visual overheads. We're going to work on having some of the information in that format so the people at home could get a good feel for what we're struggling with as we move forward. But Commissioner, if you could go ahead and introduce yourself and deliver the information in the format you'd like to deliver it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, and good morning to members of the committee. My name is Annette Kreitzer. I am the commissioner designee for the Department of Administration, and for those outside of the legislature, what that means is I have not yet been confirmed by the legislature, and so that's the appropriate term as commissioner designee. I won't take a lot of time for comments because I know we have a lot of information to get through this morning. Melanie Milhorn is here from the department, and also Charlene Morrison, who's going to be taking my seat. She is our chief financial officer. As you know, I've been in the job a short time, so I'm still growing into it. And we've put this presentation together, but I think the more appropriate folks for you to hear from are Melanie and from Charlene. And so our objective in consultation with the chairman is to start everyone off on the same page, to go back and look at Senate Bill 141, what were the objectives of that legislation, and what were the protections that were put in place with the legislation, and where are we now, so that as you go forward discussing these issues and making policy calls, you'll be starting from the same framework. So with that, Melanie Milhorn.
For the record, my name is Melanie Milhorn with the Department of Administration. Thank you very much, members of Finance, Senate Finance. It's our pleasure to be here this morning, and I'm going to have Charlene join me. And what we would like to do, we've prepared a presentation for you, and this is on the financial status of PERS and TERS right now. And so if you would like to, it's a 7-page presentation, the very back page, if you want to remove that and just kind of set that next to the material that we're going to be covering this morning. This will be our summary page, and this is what we're going to finalize our presentation with. But this presentation has been developed to build through the various different financial reports in order to get to the summary page. So there are three particular areas that we would like to cover with you this morning, which include the protections that were put in place with the enactment of Senate Bill 141. The second phase of this presentation involved the financial reports for PERS and TERS, the most recent financial status. And I think it's really important because this is a unique situation where PERS and TERS, during the course of 2006, actually have had three separate financial reports prepared on the retirement system for PERS and TERS. Normally speaking, in an annual period of time, there's an actuarial valuation report only, along with the supplement for PERS. So this is a situation where there has been some confusion about what the unfunded liability amount may be and what is the actual rate, because there were three separate rates that were developed as a result of these reports. The three reports are the actuarial evaluation as of June 30th, 2005, which was presented to the legislature in March of 2006. The second report that we are going to be covering is a level dollar amortization schedule, and that was prepared at the request of the ARM Board in September of 2006. And the last report that we would like to cover with you is the experience study for PERS and TERS that was completed in October of 2006. All of the financial reports that we are going to be sharing with you this morning and discussing with you are all available on the division's webpage. So those, after those reports were prepared, we posted those on the webpage. So there's a lot of detailed information. This is going to be the high-level highlights associated with those various different reports. This stack right next to me can be considered most of the detail associated with these 7 pages. So there is considerable amount of data. And then again, the last page is the financial summary, which looks at the last 5 years and the buildup of the unfunded liability for PERS and TERS. So turning to page 3 of your presentation material, Senate Bill 141 established the Alaska Retirement Management Board, which we refer to as the ARM Board, and Alaska Statute 3710.210 states that the board has the financial obligation to manage and invest these assets in a manner that is sufficient to meet the liabilities and the pension obligations of the retirement system. Now, on that particular point, I think it's very important to recognize that what happened under Senate Bill 141 is that there were three separate boards that had responsibility for the retirement systems. And when the Senate Finance Committee studied that particular issue, and Senator Stedman and Senator Green especially, what they concluded is that it was very important that this be one board that manages those assets in order to meet the liabilities of the system. So it dissolved three boards, which was the PERB, TURB, and the ASPIB board, Public Employees Retirement Board, Teachers Retirement Board, and the ASPIB is the Alaska State Pension Investment Board. The Alaska State Pension Investment Board just dealt with the assets and investing those assets, and the Public Employees Retirement Board and Teachers Retirement Board dealt with the liability portion, including the appeals that flowed through those different boards. So this was a...
Just for a minute, please. I'd like the record to reflect that Senator Dyson has arrived at the committee. We have Representative Hawker in the audience. Thank you. And one quick thing. We'll hold the questions until the department is done, and then we'll open it up. Go ahead.
Thank you. The Alaska Retirement Management Board has 9 trustees that serve on this board, and Commissioner Kreitzer is one of the trustees that serves on the Alaska Retirement Management Board. Senate Bill 141 provided for important protections. That's found in Alaska Statute 3710-220. Those protections include that the system will have an experience study conducted not less than every 4 years. We're going to go into detail later about what the experience study is and what it performs. Healthcare cost assumptions are reviewed annually by the actuary. Because the healthcare assumptions play are one of the primary drivers associated with the unfunded liability, it's particularly important that that assumption be looked at on an annual basis. The actuarial assumptions are reviewed by a second actuary, independent of the primary actuary. The Division of Retirement and Benefits has Buck Consultants, as the primary actuary. The Department of Revenue, Division of Treasury, also has a second actuary, which is GRS, Gabrielle Roeder and Smith, which independently looks at the reports that go to the ARM board, evaluates those for reasonableness before the ARM board is ever presented with that information. There's an independent audit of the actuary that is conducted not less than every 4 years. The last audit that was conducted on the system was in 2002 by Milliman USA, which resulted in dramatic increases to the unfunded liability with corresponding decrease in the funding ratio. And it's important to note that when that particular audit was conducted in 2002, it is referred to as a limited scope audit. Limited scope audit meaning that there is not replication testing that is performed. A full scope audit, on the other hand, provides for replication testing, and we're going to talk about replication testing a little bit further in this presentation. And an independent audit of performance will not be conducted any less than every 4 years. By requiring these financial reports to be prepared in accordance with this schedule, it is designed to reduce the shock factor that can happen and has occurred with our systems, for example, with the valuation for 2002 and the valuation for 2005, and we're going to talk about that a little bit further. Turning to page number 4 in your presentation, this is the very first report that we're going to discuss. It's the actuarial valuation results. This is performed annually on PERS and TERS. And in November of 2005, just some background information, Buck Consultants was awarded the contract for professional actuarial services for the Division of Retirement and Benefits. Prior to November of 2005, Mercer Human Resource Consulting had been the actuary for the PERS and TERS retirement systems for 29 years. So this was a very big change for our retirement systems. The purpose of an actuarial valuation. It measures the accrued liabilities for the retirement system, and it compares that against the actuarial assets in order to determine the funding ratio for the retirement systems. And a primary reason behind the valuation each year is to determine what the employer contribution rate is going to be. In March of 2006, Buck performed a replication and actuarial review of the methods and assumptions that were used by Mercer in the valuation as of 2004. The reason that they did this is because they were awarded the contract, they are the new incoming actuary, and they do not want to take over the body of work, the data that had been performed by the other actuary, without going through what is considered a replication testing process. And what that replication does is, you know, just what the name implies. You have to be able to independently replicate the work of the former actuary in order to match those liabilities. And they will only accept data that is within a certain tolerance level. And that tolerance level is between 1 and 3%. Any deviation above and beyond that, they reject the data, they drill back down to find out exactly why they cannot match those liabilities. And in this particular case, what they found is that Mercer had made errors, medical coding errors, and they had not properly applied the statute provisions. And they identified, and in that process, they reject the data, and then they identified why the liabilities didn't match up. And then in this particular case, they found that there was not significant liability error on the pension side. However, on the medical side for PERS, they did find significant error. And it was in the amount of $399 million that understated the medical liabilities for PERS. Based on the valuation results, the increase to the employer contribution rate in FY08 compared to FY07 is at the bottom of the page. So for PERS, it was 28.19 for FY07. It increased to 32.51. For TERS, it was 41.78 in FY07, and it was increased to 42.26. The variance, I would just add, in the medical liabilities in this particular case, when they need to be within that 1 to 3% margin for the medical liabilities, it was 5.8. And turning to report number two, this is titled Level Dollar Amortization Schedule. At the request of the ARM Board, Buck Consultants calculated the FY08 rates on a level dollar amortization of the unfunded liability for PERS and TERS. The current funding policy had been adopted in 2002, which amortizes the initial unfunded liability and the change in the unfunded liability in subsequent years over a fixed 25-year period using a 4.2% growth factor assumption. The plan is now closed to any new entrants, so it's appropriate not to use a 4.25% growth assumption. This means that the payroll base is not assumed to grow due to the addition of new members in the future. The ARM Board adopted the rates developed using this level dollar amortization method. There are two important points that I would like to raise with the committee, and that is that closing the defined benefit plan to new members does not increase the unfunded liability to PERS and TERS. And two, the adoption of the level dollar amortization schedule does not increase the unfunded liability to the plans. What does not using the growth factor do to the systems, though? Removing the payroll growth factor acts to increase the contribution rate for FY08. However, according to Buck, it will result in a lower contribution schedule in future years. There's very detailed minutes associated with this particular discussion with the ARM Board members, and that's found on the Department of Revenue, Division of Treasury, if you click under the arm board and the meeting minutes, they keep very detailed minutes that will discuss this in further detail. But some of the takeaway points during that particular meeting with Buck on this level dollar amortization schedule included that using a level dollar amortization schedule factors in that there's no increase in the payroll base against which dollars can be amortized. So the calculation then focuses on a dollar amount amortized payment irrespective of salaries. The level dollar rate is lower long term because of a higher contribution rate into the fund to pay off the unfunded liability today, which generates less interest charged on the remaining unfunded liability going forward. And on the far right-hand corner, you can see the the level dollar amortization as that compares to the valuation report for 2005. So 32.51 for the valuation report. And with the level dollar amortization schedule, it's 39.76 for PERS. For TERS, it increases the rate from 42.26 to 54.03, and the board adopted the level dollar amortization schedule. Turning to page 6 of the presentation material, this is the third report that we wanted to share with you. And an actuarial experience analysis is conducted on the pension system. The Buck Consultants advises that should be conducted on a system every 3 to 6 years. This in statute says that an experience study will be conducted every 4 years. And the last experience study was conducted in 2000 for the retirement systems. Buck Consultants completed this actuarial experience analysis in October of 2006. The purpose of an actuarial experience study is to compare the actual plan experience with the actuarial assumptions that are found in the valuation report. And assumptions are used to determine the occurrence of future events affecting the pension costs. This experience study looked at a 5-year period from 2001 through 2005. Based on the results of that study, an actuary will recommend to the board if there's sufficient data when they compare the actual system experience with that assumption, to make recommendations for changes. And if future experience is likely to be different from current trends. All of the assumptions for the valuation reports are found in section 2.3 of the valuation, but several of those assumptions include the investment return, healthcare, mortality, retirement, Alaska residency, the actuarial cost method, and disability. There's very nearly 20 assumptions altogether that are in the valuation. And in order to get an understanding of what the impact would be associated with these changes for the ARM board, they prepared this report. They looked at each of those assumptions. They made recommendation for change based on the actual experience that the system had. And they made a number of different recommendations for changes. And those changes, if you were to incorporate, they used the valuation as of June 30th of 2005. If you incorporate those assumption changes into that valuation, then your employer contribution rate on the far right-hand corner would rise from 39.76 to 46.64 for PERS, and would increase from 54.03 to 59.56 for TERS. These assumptions will be incorporated into the valuation, but that valuation is the June 30th, 2006 valuation, which is not complete. Now, the last experience study that I mentioned earlier that had been conducted on the retirement systems was conducted by Mercer. The entity that performs an experience study on your retirement systems is your primary actuary. In this particular case, the last experience study with Mercer conducted in 2002 only looked at the last 2 years of data for the retirement system. And when Milliman had looked at that experience study, they were critical at the fact that Mercer had only looked at 2 years in which to determine if there should be an assumption change associated with that. And they said that that was not a long enough period of time to actually analyze any kind of trend changes in order to make assumption changes. And when we talked to Buck about that, they agreed, and they would not conduct an experience study on a system for just a two-year period. It's just simply not enough data. And that brings us to page number 7, which is the summary page. This is divided into the top half, includes all of the key information associated with the public employees retirement system, and the bottom half provides information on the teachers retirement system. So this is the last 5 years of information. The very top portion, the valuation year, is set out, begins with 2001 and ends with FY05, the most recent valuation information that we have. The very next column is the employer contribution rate year from FY04 through FY08. The next, which is a very important assumption, is the investment return. And we recognize for our systems, not unlike any of the other retirement systems, that we experienced a 3-year bear market. The next assumption is the actuarial investment return, which our retirement systems project at 8.25. The unfunded liability beginning in FY04 through FY08, which we're currently at 4.4. However, when you incorporate the experience study into that, it's actually 5.5 for PERS and 3.1 for TERS, for a total unfunded liability when you incorporate the experience study at 8.6. Now, with that, because we're not at the actuarial calculated rate, and because we have not seen the results of the actuarial valuation as of June 30th of 2006, that's where you will hear people making projections that the unfunded liability for the PERS and TERS retirement system is actually closer to $10
billion.
We talked a little bit earlier about shock factor and why that is important that those reports be done on the retirement system so as to ensure that there's not those kinds of unanticipated surprises. When you hire an actuary, you hire them to ensure that you are not surprised in the manner that the retirement systems have been surprised based on the valuation for 2002 and 2005. The most dramatic increase that you can see when you look at the valuation for 2002, you can see that for PERS, we went from 6.77 for an employer contribution rate in one valuation year up to 24.91. The reason for this is that there was an actuarial audit performed, and remember I said limited scope, not full scope, conducted by Milliman USA in 2002, and a number of different changes were recommended as a result. They found that the healthcare trend was too low. They changed the asset valuation method in which they reset to market, taking in all of the losses in one valuation year. For TERS, the employer contribution rate went from 14.44 to 35.57. The last line that I would like to bring your attention to, well, let's look at the first the funding ratio. Starting at 100% as of the valuation for 2001, dropping to 75.2 as a result of the audit conducted by Milliman. And then right now we're at 65.7. The total employer contribution amount beginning in 2001 at $105 million and the estimated contribution as of FY08 for the PERS retirement system at $676.8 million. That is significant. Looking to TERS at the bottom of the sheet, 2001, the valuation indicated that the retirement system was funded at 95%. Currently, based on the valuation for 2005, it's at 60.9. And the contribution rate in 2001, 68.7 million. For now, estimated in FY08 at 351 million. And with that, we would be happy to take any questions that you might have.
I've got a couple of things just for clarification. And before I get into that, just for the people at home, you know, it's interesting that when we talk about percentages and all that stuff, it gets kind of lost if you look at the TERS and PERS, the retirement system. 5 years ago, the state was contributing, rounded off, $170 million a year. What's on the table in front of us now is slightly over $1 billion. Just to put in the magnitude of change, it's huge and has rippling impacts. But if you could, Melanie, explain the lag time between when the fiscal year ends and the time the board sets the rates by the time we can get them implemented, and that lag time and why it's problematic.
Sure. Chair Stedman, that is a particular lag period that is problematic for a lot of people, and that question comes up on a regular basis. And the way that employer contribution rate is determined and the basis for that lag include that at the end of that fiscal year, so right now for fiscal year FY07, but looking at June 30th of 2006, what the division will do is they provide Buck consultants with a data file that includes all of the information on the members who are enrolled in PERS and TERS. They use, and that happens probably in September, October of each year. They use that time period until March or April, sometimes longer, to prepare the valuation for the next year. Well, that has not allowed the legislature time to prepare the budget, and then that when they're setting that rate, because they need that necessary time and must use actual numbers in order to determine what the liabilities are for the system, then that brings you into the next fiscal year. So that ends up in a situation where you have approximately a 2-year lag period. So it's because of the budgeting process for the Alaska Legislature, and because the financial reports are not available until what would be sometimes after the end of the legislative session. So the valuation right now for June 30th of 2005 sets the FY08 employer contribution rate. The next valuation, which is not complete and a schedule has not been determined right now, is June 30th of 2006 will set the FY09 employer contribution rates.
Thank you, Ms. Millhorn. This is a quick comment. I've got a couple more points I want to make, and then I'm going to turn it over to some questions. But on the summary sheet on page 7, there's the asset to liability ratio showing that we were fully funded in 01, the very first column. I just like the members to remember that we have not gone back and restated the liabilities for that year. In other words, as a good example, when a corporation reports erroneous earnings, they go back and have to restate their earnings. So that 100% funding ratio would not exist if we went back and restated that. Now there's some interest, I think, in looking at the litigation issue of having that restated. But we have not, as a policy at this table, decided to spend the money to have it restated, because clearly it's some number less than 100, and for our decision making it doesn't really matter, because we're dealing with what's coming at us in the future versus what happened in the past. So in other words, that big reduction did not take place in 1 year. We worked our way into it over several. The issues on page 5 of the presentation, in the center, talks about two important points. The first one, closing the defined benefit plan, which is the old plan, to new members, does not increase the unfunded liability of the plan. We're going to have the department come back in and do more of an in-depth presentation to us on that very issue, because there's a lot of information erroneously that's out around the state. So we're going to try to put a finer point on that. The next item, adopting a level amortization. We're going to go into the differences there and why the board recommended or has adopted that level amortization and the impacts it has, and also the policy impacts that decision has on the table here. So I don't know if we're going to do that yet as a separate presentation, but those two are going to go in depth so everybody at the table understands those two issues. With that, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 5, the third bullet that you have, and the last sentence says, however, according to Buck, it will result in lower contribution schedules in future years. That's pretty nebulous. Do we have an idea when those rates might start reducing, those contribution rates? And by how much?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. We right now do not have a schedule associated with that, but we are going to be asking Buck to prepare such a schedule. In the valuations right now, for example, it sets out in section 1.5, it will provide everyone with information associated with what that 25-year amortization schedule is, what the funding ratio is, the employer contribution rate, the earnings, all of that information that's very valuable. So we are going to be asking Buck to prepare that one-page summary so you can look at what the contribution amounts into the future will be based on the adoption of this level dollar amortized schedule.
Because I find that, Mr. Chairman, I find that hard to predict, because it may even rise depending on how many of the state employees that are under the previous system stay working for the state. If a substantial portion of them decide not to continue employment with the state of Alaska, then the unfunded liability, although it may be reduced, puts a larger burden upon the number of employees that are contributing. And that would mean a lot less contributions to that plan.
And through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we need to provide more in-depth discussion about this, because I think on that very point, people, it's a little bit confusing. The unfunded liability associated with the defined benefit plan is fixed. We know what that is right now. And that amount, when you use a level dollar amortization schedule, what you're doing is you are looking at the unfunded liability and you are liquidating that debt based on that unfunded liability, but it's not driven by the employees who are contributing into the system.
Melanie, can you define level?
Pardon me?
Level.
Level dollar, taking out the growth factor associated with that. So you're looking at a payroll amount that is not intended to grow. Do you want to elaborate a little bit further, Charlotte?
Yeah, I can try. The level dollar amortization means that the amount of amortization in any given year is the same dollar amount. When the payroll growth was a assumption that we were using, when you assume that the payroll goes up, you also assume that you will collect more contributions because of that payroll growth. Therefore, the amortization would be lower because you have more contributions to cover it.
Contributions from the employer.
From the employer, yeah. Very the critical. Employee's contribution is a fixed percentage in statute, so it's all the employers who are being impacted.
So we'll when we do that presentation, maybe we can put that in some table format like Senator Hoffman was asking, so we can get a good feel here when we set the policy to either adopt and go forward with what the ARM board has suggested or do something different.
One other question that I have, Mr. Chairman. On page 7, looking at the bottom line that you talked about, the funding ratios of 65.7% for the PERS and the 60.9% for TERS, are those rates calculated after the $676.8 million is contributed, or before that?
Yeah. And through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the 60.9 and the 65.7 is based on the valuation report. It's not based on the experience study.
Thank you,
If I could, Charlene, could you introduce yourself for the record so we have it? Please.
Yes, and thank you. My name is Charlene Morrison, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Division of Retirement and Benefits.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
That was actually, I didn't have any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Elman.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just a follow-up question to Senator Hoffman's question and then a new question. You've indicated that you're going to be asking Buck to provide contribution schedule out into the future. I mean, when do you anticipate asking and when do you anticipate receiving that information?
We are going to be asking this week, and we need to find out how long that would take and also what the cost would be. So whenever we ask Buck to prepare something for us, we set out a timeline and then we ask them what the corresponding cost is.
Do you, if I could follow up, sure, Mr. Chair. I mean, it seems to me that that you're saying that it will reduce in a lower contribution schedule. So it would seem to me that Buck has some idea of what it would be. And I guess I'm just trying to nail down when you're going to get that information. Do you have a good guess?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, we don't right now, but we can certainly find out that information. We could get back to you.
Thanks.
If I could make just a brief comment on that as we go through. We all understand that we're most likely going to have a gas issue coming at the committee. It's going to later in the session, and it's going to slow things down. So the PERS and TERS issue that we're dealing with Buck, stat and stuff, the sooner the better. We, you know, aren't looking forward to any delays there, and I'll work with the administration on that so we can get that, because we'd also like to have the opportunity to have some of this information to the committee members. So we have time to digest it, because a lot of it is complex information.
If there's a cost issue, then Senator Hoffman and myself will sit down and talk about how we're going to deal with that, because some of this information we're just going to need to have. Go ahead.
On that point, I mean, I'm assuming that if there is a cost issue, it's not a general fund cost issue. It's a it comes from TERS PERS, right?
Yeah. I mean, through the chair, Senator Elton, that is correct. We do not, with the exception of two particular areas for our budget, we do not have general fund. Those are EPORs, and we do have a fiscal note amount from Senate Bill 141. It does come out of the retirement system trust funds, but I would also add that we work very hard to stay within our budgetary means, and we've had a number of different reports and inquiries, and so our professional services contract line with Buck Consultants is something that we look at very carefully.
And the new question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
On page six, Melanie, you talk about the experience analysis. You list the different, I understand this is a partial list, a different what assumptions are reviewed, and one of them is one of them is investment return, and you note on this page that future experience is one of the things that Buck will factors in. I mean, if the 5-year review is during that period of time in which investment returns have been, I almost said crappy, maybe I should say terrible. What kind of assumptions did Buck use on future investment returns? Because it seems to me that that's a big component of what has happened as you've charted it out on page 7.
Mm-hmm. And through the chair, Senator Elton, they do, Buck Consultants does do a very in-depth analysis on the investment rate return because of the sensitivity and the volatility that can happen as the result of that. If you choose a different assumption, investment assumption, a lower assumption, it drives up the liabilities. So they're very careful about that. And what they use is the ARM board sets the asset allocation for the retirement systems based on the different fund portfolios that they have. So when they set the asset allocation for the system, that's what Buck will look at in order to determine what the investment return needs to be for the systems. So, and that detailed information is available, and that particular assumption has been analyzed in depth on a couple of different occasions, so we can provide you with that information.
So that would be helpful, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, we'll be bringing the ARM board in front of us at some point, along with the permanent fund, and there's a lot of similarities in how the asset allocation is derived with targeted rates of return, so we'll go over all that.
And just a request, thank you, Mr. Chair, just a request. It would be helpful if at some point we could get, I mean, when we look at the average calculated rate, I mean, my assumption is that's a blended rate. It would be good to back out from that what the normal cost rate is, so that we can see what the normal cost rate is and then see what's left for the liability.
And through the chair, Senator Elton, we do have that information. We would be happy to provide that information to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee members? Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Melanie, under funding ratio for 2008, we're projected 60.9. But let's go back to a fiscal year that 06 as an example. How does 64.3, how does that match up against other states nationally?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I would need to take a look at that most recent information that they provide to do a compare and contrast. One thing to keep in mind, though, when you do that compare contrast is that many retirement systems, for example, do not have, either don't provide health care to their members and or do not pre-fund health care in their pension system. So we can, there's a particular entity that takes a look at what the median is for all pension systems, but we would want to be careful that we're comparing apples with apples to make sure that, you know, we have an accurate comparison.
Senator Huggins, you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Would you give us a 20-second burst on pre-funding and the implications of that from our perspective as a state versus others that don't have that practice?
Certainly, I'd be happy to do that. GASB has ruled in 2005, which is the Government Accounting Standards Board, that for post-employment health care, beginning in 2007, for retirement pension systems, that they must account for those medical liabilities, they call them OPEB, other pension employment benefits, on an accrual basis. And there is a report that I would like to share with all of you that's a very important report. It was produced by Workplace Economics in 2003 that analyzes the health care costs and the implications of GASB 43 and 45 when these different pension systems must account for those liabilities on an accrual basis. And what this report provides is that there are 11 other pension systems as of 2003 that provide or pre-fund health care in their pension systems, and because of the statute provisions, the retirement systems for PERS and TERS began pre-funding those benefits in 1976 or thereabouts. So there are other pension systems right now, and there are articles every week where those different pension systems are having to account for those liabilities. They've not run those financial reports, but for example, California is looking at anywhere from $40 to $70 billion in unfunded liability as a result of needing to account for these liabilities on their financial statements. So it's very dramatic. It's going to impact retirement systems across the nation, and so the state of Alaska has pre-funded those benefits. And
one more follow-up there, Senator Huggins, and then we'll go on to Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Melanie. That gets us to the point, and you said you're going to share with us the report of my concern of the trigger things that we're, and I might add, Mr. Chairman, that one of the benefits that I got out of going to Hawaii that made the newspaper was exactly what sharing the experiences of California and that $40 billion you talk about and what they're looking at doing and the ramifications on their state financially, which was quite valuable to me, I might add.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The on page 3, the changes made by Senate Bill 141, it says conduct experience analysis not less than once every 4 years. What was the norm? What was being done prior to that?
Yeah. And through the chair, Senator Thomas, in statute before, it was every 6 years for the PERS retirement system.
And the last analysis, if I may, the last analysis had been done in what year?
2000.
In 2000? Fiscal, and that covered what time frame?
It covered 1999 time period and 2000.
And just to follow up, That was a horrendous investment period, 99 through that time frame. Yet, or maybe I'm misunderstanding, we show negative numbers on fiscal 01, 02 on your page 7. At that point in time, was there any attention drawn to what looked like was happening then?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I think that, and you're speaking just about the investment returns?
Well, to start with, yes.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I was not here during that time period, but I'm sure, I mean, any reasonable person would be alarmed by the investment return, absolutely.
I think,
but I think that the when the ARM board is here and presenting information, they can certainly discuss that in great detail with you.
Senator Thomas, one of the things we can produce for the committee in our historical file, we can get it updated, is the allocation of the liability for investment performance, change in health care assumptions, some of the policy calls by the legislature. We actually had that all parsed out so we could actually see the contribution that each of these items made into the creation of the unfunded liability. And some items are actually positive, but they were clearly overweighted by the negative. And the investment performance is one of them on there. But we can get that. I've got some older stuff I could share with you, but we'll get it updated so we have the last couple of years on it.
All right, great. Thank you.
We have any closing comments from the administration? We have been called to the Senate floor, so I'd like to go ahead and adjourn this meeting today. It's about 5 to 11. Coming attractions on Tuesday. So everybody has something to think about in the future. We've got a Medicaid program review by Public Health Policy Group. It'll be a joint meeting of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee, along with, that'll be presented. With that, I'd like to go ahead and thank everybody for coming and staying the whole time. Meeting adjourned.